I started out my singing at First Baptist. Reverend Ripperhagen used to have me come and sing at the New Year's communion services. And he had heard me sing. But I sang, when I first came here, I sang at the school at Centennial, and Mr. Matthews heard me sing. And so he invited me out to Blue Mound to his church. And then I had dinner with Superintendent Brown. He was superintendent at that time,
yeah,
and lived in Blue Mound as a county superintendent. And so after that, then I have been to Westminster quite a few times, and Central Christian, and St. Paul, and First Methodist, and First Presbyterian, mm-hmm, quite a few churches. Beside my own, I sing in the choir. But,
you had a picture here of a group that you were singing in, and there was a very distinguished person in there with you.
Yes, that was Leontine Price, who I had the opportunity to be enrolled at Central State at the same time. She was a senior, and so was I, but I had re-entered my last year there in 48, and she was a young senior at that time. And the first time I heard her sing, I signed up to join the choral group, the ensemble. And we went to rehearsal, and they were auditioning us. And when she got up to sing, chills ran up the back of my spine. I had never heard a voice quite like that. And I sat on the edge of my seat, and she really had her priorities in line. She knew exactly what she wanted to be. She was a pianist, but strangely enough, when she began taking music, she sang alto.
Oh.
And then her music teacher worked with her and built her voice up until she was almost a lyric. But she was determined that she was going to make it to the top, and she did.
And she did.
And she did, yes.
Were you personally acquainted with
yes,
her?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
What kind of person is she?
She was a strong personality, and she had her mind set on music, and sometimes she would, become frivolous and lighthearted, but not often, because she was quite studious, and she would be practicing.
When others were playing.
Right. And I lived off the campus in one of the professors' homes, but she lived in the senior dormitory, Mitchell Hall, and we all became friends. There were three in her room, but there were four beds in there, and sometimes I'd go down and spend the weekend, or not the weekend, but spend the night with them in that bunk, mm-hmm, on top. A lot of times I would go down and fix their hair.
Mm-hmm.
And
have you had a chance to hear her or in person or see her or talk to yes, her later?
Yes. After she had started out, she was in Porgy and Bess. She was traveling in Porgy and Bess. And they came to St. Louis when I was teaching there in Madison. And she gave the people with whom I live, gave us a ticket to come to her, to the show. And all that was really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then she came out and had dinner with us.
Oh,
I went and got her, and she came out and had dinner with us. And just saying that I know somebody who's become famous, I just... But I had the same opportunity, though, almost. Well, not quite like that, but I have had a chance to touch some great people, like Marian Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
At this time when I was, this month that I was taking music from this professor, a white professor, he got me an opportunity to sing for her. But I was working in a beauty shop and I really didn't have the least idea that I had a voice that could go places, you know. I really didn't. But he thought that if I had training that I could have. And maybe I could have.
Did
if
you
I
ever
had
consider that. Making singing a career?
Yes, but I had wanted to be an entertainer, you know. I wanted to be like maybe Streisand. I wanted to do that
kind. An actress?
I wanted to be a nightclub singer, really. And then I had joined a church, then when I got the opportunity to perform in a nightclub, I didn't want to. I said, when the man offered me a chance, and by the way, I got that opportunity through entering an amateur contest.
Where was that?
In Chattanooga. And so I went down to, I called on the telephone and gave them my name, and they told me when to come down. So I said, is this open to anyone? And they said, oh yes. But when I got there, it wasn't open to everyone. It wasn't open to
anyone. They wouldn't let you enter?
Well, they didn't, they were very diplomatic. They had me to sit down and wait. So when it came time for me to be auditioned, they had turned off the sound. I didn't know that, but the man who played for me said, wait just a minute. After I had sung two or three bars of Sweet Little Jesus Boy, he said, wait just a minute. And he went and turned on so that the people outside could hear. And then that's when I knew, because they came to the window to see who was singing.
And you hadn't.
And so by the time I got to that part about, I don't know, are you familiar with Sweet Little Jesus Boy? It said, treat you mean, Lord, treat me mean too. I filled up with, I just got full. And, but he told me, he said, wait just a minute, I'm going to do something. I didn't know what he was going to do. And he made provision for me to do a show on my own. And I found a letter where he had written me. And he was going to invite me to perform at a colored show. And so I did. And they invited some other, they made it open to colored. At that time we were colored, so they made it open to. And so there were several who entered, and then I won. Uh-huh. And so from that, I got an opportunity to sing at a nightclub, but I wouldn't
accept
it.
Did you ever try it? You decided you wouldn't want it.
No, I said, I told the man, I said, I'm sorry, I wouldn't be able to. I said, I sing in the choir, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I sang in the nightclub and that game. But before that, I had won. However, out of that, I got a radio show for, I think, two or three times. I sang over the radio, and I was pleased with that.
Does it seem unusual for a person to maintain a voice as long as you have?
I think
don't
I've been blessed.
Don't voices usually deteriorate
over
the years?
Yes. I think I've been blessed. I know I've been blessed because come this May, Lord willing, I'll be 70.
And that's remarkable, isn't it, and to continue singing?
Yes.
As beautifully as you do. Well,
without any formal training. So,
well, do you have any more of the experiences? As I said, I wish people could see all of these ribbons and and awards. And,
I don't know. I have got some pictures here from where my gardenia plant received an award of horticultural excellence. That's the top award for horticulture in Pekin, Illinois.
Oh.
At the Pekin show. Mm-hmm. So I go quite a bit to
travel a great deal. Yes. You drive.
Yes.
So you really are.
And I entered the show at the Dana Thomas yeah. house in Springfield. Uh-huh. But because being a member of Springfield Garden Club, I entered there. And then this past fall, we had a show at the President's House of Sangamon State University. Mm-hmm. And I got a first on a watermelon.
Well, we wouldn't just don't have enough congratulations to you to go to match all of your many awards.
I've enjoyed it.
This has been a really wonderful experience to hear about your life. And it seems to be, you seem to be going on for years.
That one of the pictures of the bicentennial.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see any stopping you. I think you're just going to keep on and on.
Well,
I
hope I'm
really
able to
an inspiration.
Keep on.
To people to not only to achieve what you've achieved in your career, but to make such a rich adventure out of retirement.
Well, I think I thank my parents over and over for, at the time when I was growing up, I thought they were mean
and
selfish and hard on me, but I'm not lonesome, you know what I mean? I always have something to do.
Well, you have
and I'm never bored.
I don't see how you could be with all of these many activities and friends.
No.
Well, thank you so much, Frankie, for sharing your experiences with us.
Well,
it really has
welcome.
Been a very enriching experience for everyone.
Oh, whatever I go into or enter into, I try to.
I'm sure you do.
I have been artistic chairman for the Rose Show several times, and then I've been chairman of the Flower Show for the Garden Club of Decatur, And at the present time, I'm first vice president of the Garden Club. But that Revere Bowl over there, that small one, I receive for, they call me a super recruiter of membership for AAUW.
Well, I think you're super in every way.
So are you.
I thank you so much
for sharing
your experiences with us. And I know that we'll hear many more of your achievements.
Well, I don't know. I guess my time is about up now.
No, I think far from it. You have been listening to the reminiscences of Frankie Morgan, and this is Betty Trunell.
This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mrs. Horace B. Garman, and she is going to tell us about her experiences growing up in Macon County.
I had a wonderful time growing up in Macon County. It was a very pleasant place to live, and I went to the Marietta Street School as a youngster. I was an only child, and my father was very much interested in playing with me. I had a pony, which he made me take care of, but I really didn't. I think he did it all himself. And he taught me to turn cartwheels, and he taught me to play marbles. And he would take me to the Three I League ball games, which there was a field in the northeast end of town. You had to go out on the streetcars, which were the open air streetcars that they had in those days. I thought perhaps it would be interesting to talk a little bit about the corn carnival. I just barely remember it. I don't think there were very many after I was born in 1894, but I do have a picture of one, which was in 1898, and there were buildings around the park that had the fronts decorated with pieces of corn cobs, blue and red and yellow and white. They made the pictures of flags and the insignia of the state. I don't seem to be able to talk, but I know I'm being recorded. One of the things when I did when I was young, I used to love to come uptown with my mother, because always she took me to Louis Nichols' candy store, and I had a chocolate soda. And that was in the 300, end of the 300 block on North Water Street, not very far from where the Bijou Theater was, which Mr. Siegfried started in Decatur. I went to many movies there, and there was a man who played the piano, his name was Rex something, that I thought was just wonderful. Another candy store that I patronized whenever I could possibly get there was Sam Malios, I guess it is, which was near the Backrack store on Merchant Street. Among other things that were entertaining, there were often things like balloon ascensions, independent exhibitors who would come and perform for us, and there would be a merry-go-round come and establish itself on a vacant lot, and we would get nickels from our parents to ride on the horses of the merry-go-round. I was very much interested in the library. First, in going to the library with my mother, before I had a card myself, it was a lovely library. The hall was, there was on one wall of the hall, there was a basin of red marble. I can see it now. And above it was a plaque which recited that it was a Carnegie Library. I think that plaque, I hope, I remember when they were tearing the library down, I said to somebody, I hope they did, they kept that plaque and that marble fountain. And I was told that it was stored in the courthouse. But where it is now, I've never been able to find out. I just don't know. I remember, but Alice Evans, during my days, was the librarian. And even later on, when I was on the library board, I remember that Miss Abel and Florence Love and the woman who took care of me at the library. Once a month, there were new books at the library. And those in the children's room were particularly interesting to me. I read all the books of the little, my little Japanese cousin and my little German cousin and all those, and all the Elsie books and all the Pepper books. I read everything I could put my hands on. And I hung on the doorknob before the door would open at 9 o'clock so that I would be sure and get, they would let us take out only two new books, and I had to get just the right ones. I remember a little later on when I was in high school, Miss Jane Hamilton presented to the library a collection of Lincoln photographs which she had made, and she had become a good friend of Alice Evans, our librarian, and she came to Decatur and stayed with Mrs. Evans. I was on some sort of a committee of sorts to help with the on this occasion. And out in front of the library, those of you who can remember what the library looked like, they built a platform. And the Goodman Band, I remember, was on the platform. And Miss Hamilton made a speech and presented the photographs to the library. And O.W. Smith was the mayor then. And he accepted them and thanked her. And then we, this committee I was on, we took Miss Hamilton and I don't know who else, and the mayor and Mrs. Evans, and went to the St. Nick, which was the place to go in those days. And when we got there, Miss Hamilton almost had hysterics when she realized that she had on one gray stocking and one black one. She was a charming woman. And what has happened to that collection of Lincoln photographs, I haven't the faintest idea. I hope it's still in existence. When the YWCA was organized in Decatur, my mother signed me up to go to the, to take swimming lessons and to take gymnasium lessons. And we wore bloomers. I remember they were very curious things. About that same time that money was being collected to build a building for the YWCA, Billy Sunday came to Decatur. And everybody was very much interested in him. The tabernacle was a temporary sort of building, which is where the Greek church is now, on West El Dorado Street. Mr. Sunday had a new baby while he was here, and we were all real thrilled with that. I can remember all these silly things about that. He contributed to the fund for the YWCA by giving us his diamond. I don't know why I say us, but later on I was very much part of the YWCA. He gave us his diamond ring, and Frank Curtis, who ran the jewelry store in town, bought it and gave us the money for it. And as I recall, it was about $500. We got $500 as a contribution from Mr. Sunday. later on, when the building was about 30 years old, Mrs. J.D. Moore was president, and died suddenly, and I was vice president, and I became the president. My board was a very interesting board. The most prominent women in Decatur were on my board. People like Mrs. Edith K. Pegram and Mrs. T.T. Roberts and Mrs. Elizabeth Wells and Miss Myra Bell Ewing. And we had a board meeting every Tuesday before our Thursday board meeting, once a month. And that was a real occasion. Those luncheon parties were really delightful. And the women who were on the board would drive down to the, several of them would drive down in their little electric Phaetons and park in front of the building and in front of the post office, which was next door. And I would come down in my Model T Ford and I would drive around and park behind the building. But not because I minded driving a Ford, but because there was room for me back there and I could go there. The YWCA did much work with the girls who worked in the Moore plants. And we did probably what was the first work with colored girls. Crystal Byrd was one of the prominent colored women of the period, and the club which was organized for the colored girls, they called the Crystal Byrd Club. And whenever we spoke of those girls, we always called them the Crystal Byrds. And they were a very nice group. One of them was Georgia Leflett, who did social work for colored people after she grew up. And she was one of my good friends, and I visited with her often on the street corners. She died just not long ago. I wanted to mention that when I was in school, they used to take us to the cemetery, and they called it Decoration Day then, and on Decoration Day we would go and decorate the graves of both the blue and the gray soldiers in Greenwood Cemetery. I joined study class about 1943, and it has been one of the most rewarding things that has happened to me. It was organized in 1901, and was it 1901 or 1901? And anyway, we're 82 years old, and I guess that's 1901. And many of the women who'd been on my YWCA board were the members of study class. And they have a special vocabulary. We do what we call topics. Art class had been organized by Mrs. James Milliken. And when the library was torn down, in the cornerstone, they found a little book in Mrs. Milliken's handwriting, which had a list of the members of the art class. Then when the study class was organized, they were supposed to be the daughters and the friends of daughters of the art class members. And they were girls who had been away to school and had come home. There wasn't any radio or television or that sort of thing. They had to make their own amusements. And they decided the art class studied art and the study class studied history. And during these years, we've studied just about everything and have repeated. This last 2 years, we've studied Italy, particularly the Renaissance of the last year. And in the beginning, our meetings would be at Mrs. Evans' house. Mrs. Alice Evans, whose husband was a grain company, Evans. And she grew up in the old Oglesby, what is now the Oglesby house. And when we would often have a frolic. Every year, in fact, we had a frolic. And I always think it's funny when we call the activities of study class a frolic. The house was adapted to theatricals, and we would dressed in an upstairs dressing room. And the year that I was, the first year I was on the program, we did skits and funny takeoffs of the things we studied. And I had to sing a song about being a little Canadian fish. And I made my costume out of a Norman's dress bag by adding scales for a fish. And I had that costume in my attic for years until I tore up my house and moved away. Mr. Shaw was real good at appointing me to do things, and I, along with Fran Lyon, did casework for the Red Cross when we would investigate these young women who were the wives of boys who'd gone in the Army and who were having new babies and had applied for and were getting allowances from the Army. And I remember he appointed me also on a bond sale drive that I worked on. One of the things I remember is going to the dedication of the new dam. And on that occasion, Johnny Weissmuller came and was featured, and I've always remembered his name for that reason. I don't believe I mentioned the theater, did I, the Powers Grand. When I was in school, the Powers Grand Opera House was at the south end of Water Street, where the Orlando is now. And I saw many famous people there. I remember Bob Hope and Al Jolson, and I can't remember all the people I saw. And there would often be what was called a stock company, and they would have a different play every week. And I think it cost about a quarter to get in, and it was lots of fun to go. And the boxes were reserved for celebrities and that sort of thing. During about 1930-something, during the Depression, the YWCA was in charge of a Christmas store, which was in the old Herald building. At that time, the Herald and Review had combined and they were not using it. Mr. Shaw again gave me the job of running the Christmas store. Margaret Wood and I ran it, and we collected toys, broken toys and unused toys, through the churches and different organizations, and the Painters Union and the Carpenters Union refurbished the toys and painted them, and the women's societies in the churches made doll dresses, and it was really quite and we also collected food to give away. That was the first time that we had a Christmas store. I think of recent years they've had something similar. Of course, activities in town there were a great many of them to help people, and one of them was to have a black man. I was married in 1930, and not long after that they organized a program which would include everybody employing a block man for half a day. And I can remember that my husband and I really couldn't afford it, but we did it anyway. And we had a very good block man who was a skilled carpenter. And later on, when I was president of the YWCA, I was able to hire him as our janitor at the new redone YWCA. The YWCA had inherited about $100,000 from Jake Latham, a prominent lawyer in Decatur, and who was unmarried and was a wealthy man, and we decided to spend the money and do the building over. That contract, I was told at the time, was the largest contract to be awarded in quite a long time because of the Depression. And it was given to Roy Christie to redo our building. We also ran Camp Kiwanis. And Camp Kiwanis was made possible by Barney Fulton, who owned property on the lake and who gave us the money to, gave us the land, and the Kiwanis Club built a building for us. And then we had cottages around. And I can remember on one occasion, Gail Tolman and I washed all the dishes and made all the beds for the girls who were coming to that camp. And Mr. Schaub, who was one of our trustees and very active in YWCA affairs, his daughter was our swimming teacher. What else haven't I mentioned?